Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone. Hello, one and all, and welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Kyle Swagger, along with our two pros, as always, Alex G. Fox and Ewan Rankin. Alex, how's your week been?
Very productive. Nice, good week. Long may it continue.
And you sound so enthused about it.
Yeah, I've now got to do all the work in the office to, you know, finish off the work that I did outside the office. So that's like another week's worth of work.
Well, thank God for the weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Ewan, are you feeling a little bit more up to it, a little better week, or are you still feeling like Alex?
We've switched the big show to Thursday nights, and it's a real positive move, definitely. I feel a bit tired before I start it, but, you know, I get through, once I get ready, I go through it, and it's great, whereas on Fridays, I've just got such a ram of shows that I don't, you know, after I finish Mac, I want a beer. I don't want to think about coming back at 10 o'clock and having to stay sober from 2 o'clock in the afternoon onwards.
Yeah, so, exactly. Your weekend can actually start about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I'm looking forward to today, definitely.
I don't blame you at all. Yes. Good. Actually, we got some good stories this week to talk about for a change. For stories.
I had a real old hunt this week.
Well, but before I do that, though, we got to mention about, you know, the, well, I guess it's over with now, but the photo thing for the album cover art that's on our Flickr page.
Well, can I ask the judges for a week's extension?
Because it was raining, because you couldn't go out.
I honestly sweat myself. Right, I'm going to do it on Saturday because that's my first weekend with no rugby and that kind of stuff. So I set myself ready to go on Saturday, and it peed down with rain, so I couldn't go out and do my one. So
in England,
I will do it this afternoon. I'll do it this afternoon. I promise.
Yeah, hurry up! It's bound to rain tomorrow.
It's bound to rain right now. Let's go over to the stories. I want to get into this first, because this is a topic that always comes up over and over and over on the show. And I think it's a good thing, a good discussion to start with. It's not really news, but is film better than digital?
Yes.
We talk about it all the time. Yes. This is going to be the shortest discussion in history.
I would add the word unquestionably yes.
Oh, unquestionably yes.
Because I took the trouble of spelling that out before, so I'm going to use it.
I would say that I can't tell the difference half the time, to be honest.
You won't do up to 10x8 or 7x5 or that kind of stuff. It's pointless trying to work out what the difference is. If you're talking about the fact that you're going to blow up to a billboard, or you want something that's going to hang in a gallery at really good size dimensions at 80 or 120 inches or something like that, then yeah, I'm with Alex. Film every time.
I've got to ask you a question, though. You're talking about huge billboard things and this kind of things, right? Educate me a little. A billboard is huge, right?
Yeah.
How the hell do you develop that?
Well, billboards are printed, don't forget.
Oh, so, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's true. They're in sections and they roll them on. Yeah,
they're not hanging up negatives. No. So, I mean, there's interesting stories. This was a story about a guy who has made himself a set of Bellows camera, and he's going about America taking pictures. And this thing's huge. I mean, it takes 14-inch plates. 14 by 36 inch plate. So it's a big camera. It's
bigger than people's TVs.
Yeah, I mean, this thing's 80 inches across, perhaps, something like that. Yeah. It's very big. I've used bigger, I have to say. I'm not trying to do one-upmanship here, but there used to be a place called RTE Graphics near here. It had gone out of business years ago. But when I was doing some stuff for Pretty Polly, the tights manufacturers, they had to take an image of a large image that they'd already blown up that someone had airbrushed. So, you know, that's the way it was done 25 years ago. You'd take an image of a girl with no skirt on, and then someone would come along and airbrush a skirt over the top of the tights, and then they would have a camera, they'd take it into a big room, they'd light it, and they'd shoot it straight onto a positive paper just right there. And it was a big old thing with rails that ran the bellows out, and it shot onto a 6-foot long piece of paper, so it was huge. It was the same kind of thing as this.
It reminds me when you were talking about doing like a camera in front of a camera. It reminds me of the old movies where they used to just stand in front of a screen and actually run. Is it kind of run film behind it, I guess, isn't it?
Well, they used to have paper behind it that was painted, you know, a backdrop that was on two spindles that were running round and round and round and round. And mm-hmm. That was the car chase scenes, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what that kind of reminds me of. Mm. Well, Alex, you say film. Do you still use film? Is it a regular thing that you go about your daily life that you would even say that I've got this today, I'm going to use film? Or if you had digital with you, which would you choose?
It depends who's paying the bill. I mean, one of the problems I have with film is I use specialist films, and first of all, getting the damn stuff. Kodak have stopped supplying half of their films to the UK. You can still get a lot of it in the States, and I actually, who's it called? Adorama in New York City. They send it to me. But you know, if I order it now, it will be here by tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock in the morning. And it's still cheaper for me to import it from the States than it is to buy it here, even if I could. If I know this isn't very good for visual, but just quickly for anyone that is watching, that is a 5x4. So it's a 5x4-inch piece of film.
Alex, just tilt it up to the ceiling a bit.
Okay. Yeah, I know. We're getting reflection.
Getting you fright.
Right. Also, I've got a massive delay, so that doesn't help.
And push okay, it right
so
forward
you've
to
got
the,
a 5x4 piece of film. How many 35 mils would you get on that? 20?
Yeah.
So that's 20. If you like, that's 20 times the resolution of a 35 mil. And here's a 10x8, which, again, this is now 4 times the resolution of that 5x4. I'll do it that way around so you've got some idea of what's going on. So see, if you think about
the
10x8
just looks
wise,
like this big reflective surface. I can't even tell.
Yeah, sorry. But if you think about that as, if you like, pixel size, that is the finest pixels you'll ever get, if you like, and that's probably the equivalent of a 1,000 megapixel camera. And also you've got to remember that film, the actual colours it can pick up, it can pick up far more colours than the best camera sensor ever can. So even forget about just the size and the resolution, the actual quality and the subtlety of the colours and everything are far superior on professional films. Okay, having said that, what this guy is doing is crazy.
Yeah, this is crazy. I mean, usually actually using X-rays, the plates for X-rays is film. Mm. In this thing, which is insane. You touched on something there, Alex, that just made me race my mind a second. You said the sensor, when you use film, it picks up more color.
Yeah, there's a finite amount of colors that any sensor can pick up. You know, it's got a color space and you know, it's got various depths and there's numbers. You know, there's X bit of colors, there's 24-bit. I think 24-bit might be the most you can get now, isn't it? But what that does, because it's a digital format, there is, you know, there's a point where a color is on or a color is off. They might give you these amazingly, this can pick up 8 billion colors or something, but you know, in reality, it can't. And also in reality, anything that you show it on digitally, or if you print it digitally, it can only print so many colors. Whereas if you print things chemically and you take things chemically, it's a finite amount, an infinite amount of colors. The colors will be there. The gradation will be there, which is something that you're only interpreting with digital, whether you're taking it or printing it digitally. It's only an interpretation. It's not the true full frame of colors.
Which you would know quite well, Ewan, because you've spent many years in the dark room doing that kind of stuff. I mean, are you more impressed with film?
Every time. I mean, if it was a straightforward discussion about quality, there wouldn't be an argument between me and Alex in the slightest. I mean, he's absolutely 100% correct. There is no compromise. There is no, no competition between the two as far as quality of image is concerned. The point being, though, there is a sliding scale, a balance scale, about how much quality you stick on one side versus how much screwing around you do on the other. And for what I shoot for people, for brochures, for newspapers, for advertising materials that probably go up to no more than about AO in size, the film would be cumbersome. It would be overkill. It would be ridiculously hard for me to function. And cost-wise, you know, for what people want to pay for that kind of stuff, there's a million and one people queued up behind me who'll do it cheaper than I'd charge if I was doing it on film. Alex is a completely different market. You know, that's the beauty of having the two of us on the show. You know, we've got completely right. contrasting styles and businesses. If you're talking about the quality element, though, I mean, you look at a great example is where you go through depth of field and things like that, and edges of items which are further away in the depth of field, you know, film dithers the edges properly, so you get a very smooth gradient from subject to background, whereas digital is guessing. So digital is creating a false edge and then deliberately picking one pixel inside, one pixel outside, and then the next layer of dithering is picking 2 pixels inside, 2 pixels outside, until it creates what it thinks is a very good representation of the dithering effect that you get with film. And it does a reasonably good job, you know. It's let's not be too poncy about this, you know. And is film dying out? Yes, it is. But it's dying out because of the fact of the balls ache that goes along with using it. And Alex gets paid for the balls ache. Most photographers don't.
Right.
Oh, I agree completely.
I agree too. I mean, it's in the same situation it is with, you know, with the music industry, that everything's going digital. It's cheaper, it's faster, it's more efficient in a lot of cases. You do lose something, but for people out there like myself that are looking at a photo, you're going to tell me if it was shot on a digital camera or if it was going to shot using and developed film. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference, and probably most people wouldn't.
I took a picture last week in a vehicle repair shop for a guy who wants his website redoing, and I'd gone in 2 weeks earlier and taken a picture of a crunched Mercedes, and I went back 2 weeks later after they'd fixed it, and I took a picture of the fixed Mercedes. Then I laid the two over the top of each other so that they could do a blurring through from one to the other with a mouse over on the website, which is what they wanted, and I shot the second shot and created the whole thing in the time that it would have taken Alex to get the film out of the cartridge, and I've got a new lens at the door.
Yeah, go get it, man. Go get it. He's like a kid on Christmas.
My goodness. Okay, we have a break here, so I can answer Tone's question here. Yeah, if you, the question here is, does that also happen? It is obviously the dithering. I hope it's dithering. Happen if you took an image and shot it on film, printed it, and then scanned it? Yes, it does. Scanning does exactly the same thing as photographing. In fact, yesterday I spent the entire day taking to bits a scanner for something to do because I didn't know how this particular scanner works. And basically all they do is it's the same sort of CCD as you get on a camera, but what it does, it does it in a very thin line, and that's why it tracks along the size of a print. Oh, looks like Ewan's got a big box and he's very happy. So yes, it causes exactly the same problems. If you've got to remember, the print that you got isn't as good as the light that came through the lens in the first place. So what you're doing is you're degrading it yet another stage. So yes, it does happen on, if you say, scan a print or if you scan some film, but not to the same extent as if you shot it in the first place, but it does happen. You can't re-scan a scan and keep going. It won't two or three times and you've had it. There won't be anything there worth looking at.
It's like copying a copy on a photocopier.
Mm. Yeah. Similar thing.
Degradation. Okay, now everything stops. The news is out the window. We got to know what you got. What did you get? Show us.
I'm still in the plastic. Hang on a second.
For the ones that are on audio right now, you're going to have to give a full description, please.
I've bought myself a new lens. There we go. It's the cat's out of the bag. And fortunately...
Yeah, and the wife knows about it now.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't listen to the podcast. God, she's got more time. But basically, here we go. You are hearing it, a live unboxing of my brand new lens. Yes.
First time ever on the photo show.
And if his wife's listening, it's a brand new free lens that he got given for being such a nice lad.
No, sod it, it's a pair of shoes.
The lens and the heel.
There we go. Receipt, which I've got to hide, digital cover, and it's a prime lens. There we go. A 400mm Canon f4.5.
Beautiful. Oh, they're only 50 quid.
Well, they're a tad more.
Yeah, exactly. I have a 5 or 6 in front of that.
But it's...
You say a prime lens. What's a prime lens?
Well, a prime lens is just basically it doesn't move. It's primed to be at 400 mil. It's set at 400 mil, and that's the end of it. It doesn't go anywhere. If you got one that moves in and out, you'd describe that as a zoom lens because it zooms. Mm.
But the beauty of a prime lens, all the glass, everything about it is set up to, you don't get any aberrations, you don't get any barreling, you don't get any distortion, because everything is set up just to correctly show that view. Whereas when you've got a zoom lens, as you go in and out on the zoom, it changes quite a lot of the back glass parameters, and then you have to correct it afterwards.
And you remember we talked the other week about the fact that you get like a vignette effect on it that you get less with prime lenses, and also if you're looking to shoot something where you've got a zoom lens, you'll tend to find that you get soft focus at the top end of the zoom, which a prime lens will be crystal clear all the way up because all it's doing is shooting at one distance. There you go.
I mean, the point is, a good prime lens at somewhere like f11, which is in the middle of its range of aperture, it should be pin sharp. That's a nice lens.
Okay, show it off. Show it off. I know you're dying to, Ewan.
There we go.
Beautiful.
Oh, it's scratched.
Send it back.
Scratches.
Perfect. Okay, now you got the prime lens. What are you going to use this for? Other than, don't say for taking pictures. It's like a tool. So what are you going to use it for?
Well, to be honest, it's the first lens I've ever bought where I don't have a commercial use for it. I bought it because I want to take nicer pictures at the rugby club, which is going to make the wife even more free and angry.
But that will give your wildlife photography and things like that. The shots you did of the birds the other day, that 400mm prime lens, lovely picture.
Absolutely. The beautiful thing about this is as well, it's going to be very easy to hide because it looks exactly the same as my 2.8 7200mm lens. So
you just got it, and now he's worried about trying to hide it.
Yeah, no. But it's going to be like Superman and Clark Kent. She won't be able to see these both together.
They just tell her they bred.
She was bad enough when I told her I got this thing for 50 quid yesterday. So
I know what your weekend's going to be like if she finds out.
Yeah, on the couch.
Yeah. Well, at least you got a TV and a lens.
A lens to cuddle.
Oh yeah. Do you think she'll find out when I'm looking at it under the bed sheets with a flashlight tonight? What's that sticking in my back? It's my 400mm prime lens, darling.
You said it's for the rugby thing, right? Now, you were just saying a while ago that hasn't rugby kind of, is it gone down for you a little bit? You were saying this off show.
It's off season.
It's off season. It's finished.
So you're not going to be able to get to use this thing for how many months?
No, I'm shooting for the cricket club as well.
I was going to say, it's always cricket. Okay. Oh, 400mm prime. Get yourself behind the bowler's arm. You get a lovely shot.
Yeah, no, that's what I've done. The last time I went up there, I shot with me 200mm.
That's not long enough.
And blew it up. And then but the other thing I've done is I've got my backup body is a 450D, which is a 1.6
multiplier.
So
yeah.
If I stick that on that, that'll take it to 600mm. So that should be beautiful.
You might have to stand outside the ground to get the batsman in, but that'll be great.
Guess what? Well, they're at home on Saturday.
Well, that's handy. At least you get to try it out.
450D, good camera. Thank you. I agree, Strummer. No question.
Right, back to the show.
Yeah, back to the show. Now that Ewan, we got Ewan's attention, well, probably not his attention for the rest of the show now that he's looking at his lens, but never mind. On now, why didn't you just get a Leica camera at the same time?
Because I would have got a point and shoot at 35-105 for the same money.
Yeah, but you've got to remember this Leica camera is a point and shoot.
Well, yeah, I guess we've moved on to the Leica camera story.
Sorry,
what? What's that?
We've moved on to the Leica camera story.
Yeah, it's good. It's a terrible segue, but I don't care. It's the only way I could do it. So their sales are up almost 60% over the past year, which is amazing because Leica, we have another article here where Leica cameras are expensive. And then on top of that, they had a old camera that sold for, what, $1.9 million?
Yeah, it's only dollars, though.
€1.3 million.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not pounds. If it was £1.9 million, I'd have said that's expensive. But dollars, nah, it's nothing.
You bought it, didn't you, Ewan? It's coming here in a little while before the wife gets back.
Yeah, DHL have got it at the minute. There's no film for this. I mean, what's the point? I don't get it.
This is literally just to put on your shelf.
It's increasing in value, though. I mean, this is being traded as an antique because if you look at it, in 2007, it sold at 330,000 euros. So it's added €1 million euros in value in 4 years.
I've got a theory because I was thinking about this, right? Leicas are made in Germany, but it was Eastern Germany, right? Sure. So you're talking about a part of the world where in the last few years you've gone from nobody having anything to a lot of people having a lot. You've got some extraordinarily rich people that have sort of, it's like the Russians and various things like that. So there's a new market that might want to buy back some heritage. So I think that might be why this thing has gone through the roof. Also, yeah. I would love it. If I was a multimillionaire, I would have bid for this. I mean, I've got various old cameras that, you know, that I never will put a bit of film in it. There's no point to it. But I love them. If my dad, if he had the money, he'd have bought this. You know, there's some people out there, you know, me and my family mainly, that we would have torn off someone's arm to get hold of this camera. I think it's an amazingly wonderful piece of kit.
Proving that everyone's got a door they need to stop open.
Yes. Yeah, I would have filled it with concrete because it wouldn't have moved. The door would have shut. But yeah, I can see it. I can understand it. But as for the rest of the Leica cameras, again, I was thinking again, same sort of issue. Leica, the quality on the market isn't quite there at the moment. You've got Panasonic and they're making nice cameras, but they're making it with basically bits of Leica. And so maybe there's a, you know, there's parts of Europe that want to buy European. They want to buy maybe the Germans, the Russians, etc., etc. They want to buy a nice camera and they want to buy a Leica. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot of people out there that want to buy local. You know, it's not something that we can necessarily do in Britain. It'd be pretty difficult to buy a local camera.
M&S series, though, right? I mean, this is the point and shoots, I'm guessing, right? The M&S series cameras. I mean, that's the one we're kind of talking about right now, I guess.
Yeah, there's like upmarket Lumixes. But you do pay for it. You know, you pay for... You know,
I think that's the key point. You know, on your buck to bang ratio with those cameras, they're ludicrous in comparison to what you get for cheaper cameras at the proportion of difference. You know, yes, you'll get higher quality. Yes, you'll get decent images, but you'll get great images with lower quality ones. You know, the people that are buying the Leicas are looking for extreme quality, but they're not getting extreme quality based on extreme price.
That's what I was going to ask you, though, Ewan. I mean, but their sales are up, so obviously somebody's buying these things. But you're saying it's people that I just want the name on the front of my camera, but they could have got a better camera going towards the Panasonic direction or something like that.
I think you're talking people who aren't general consumers are buying them.
You know what I think it is? I think it's the same reason motorbike sales go up every now and again. It's people that used to shoot on film that have retired. They've got a few quid. They've just sold their house, and they want to buy their first digital camera. And they're buying a name, they're buying a quality that they knew when they bought their first film camera. So this is what it is. It's middle-aged men that their wife won't let them buy the motorbike, so they go and buy themselves a new camera.
I agree. I think that's exactly it. I think that's probably 40-year-old midlife crisis. But
yeah,
midlife
I can't crisis, wait to
I
be.
I buy one. Lenses, I don't buy cameras.
I was going to say, though.
I'd like to be a 40-year-old.
If you had the money, though, Ewan, wouldn't you get one?
No.
No, really?
No, I wouldn't. I've never been enamored or overly impressed with Leica. They're great cameras, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they're awful, but if I've got if you're going out with a point and shoot, then you're going somewhere where you don't want to take an SLR because of bulk and you don't want to take an SLR because of risking damage to it. Why the hell would you take a £1,200 camera in that case? I'd rather take a £500 eBay 450D with a 40 quid lens on it.
It's to show it off, though. It's got to be just to show it off. I mean, if you're saying this camera can do much better than this camera, well, the only reason why you're taking the other camera is because, well, it says Leica on it.
No, but it would do better than other cameras, but it's the degree of the word much that you're discussing then at that point and the amount of extra benefit you'd get from having it. In my mind, and this is purely my opinion, And purely my use case, I couldn't justify the extra cash that I would spend on that when I can buy myself probably three lenses that would give me fantastic results on a DSLR. Or I could buy myself five Panasonic Lumixes that if you put the two together at 7x5, I'd defy you to find a difference.
Mm.
No, I agree. It's the same way as you can go, I mean, taking it into Kyle's range or understanding here, you can go and buy a nice amp made by, I don't know, I don't even know if JVC still make amps. You can go and buy a nice $200, $300 amp to play your music and it will sound great. But you can go and buy a $10,000 amp that will sound just a little bit better.
But that's exactly the parable, the parable of the two things. Because if you're doing that, Kyle, and then what you're doing for your output is putting it on 80 kilobits per second mono MP3 and sticking it on iTunes,
yeah,
where's the point?
There's no point.
I'd rather have $9,000 in my pocket.
Yeah, there's no point.
And that's the thing, is that this is what I keep getting angry about with things like RAW and so on. People say, oh, you know, I always shoot in RAW. That's dumb snobbery. Because you're creating an extra piece in your workflow that takes your time, that doesn't give you anything. If you're in bright, sunny daylight and all you want's a 7x5 of you and the kids or an 8x10 printed off down at Costco, what the hell are you doing shooting in RAW?
I'm going to give you a good example. I shot a friend's child's communion.
I knew you were going to jump in on this, Alex. Go ahead.
No, I shot a communion the other day and outside the church, it was beautifully sunny and I shot it all in JPEG, right? Because it was... I didn't need anymore.
Good.
But when I got inside the reception and et cetera, I switched it over to RAW because I wasn't sure if I was going to need to do some adjustments afterwards.
I have no arguments whatsoever with that.
And so, you know, I'm not a stickler in the mug for using RAW.
There are people out there, Alex.
Horses for courses.
There are people out there who just will not do anything other than shoot RAW.
Well, you know...
Well, This is going to lead me into another story because I wanted to bring this up because it caught my eye this week, probably because of you, Alex. An HTC Windows phone supposedly is supporting a 12 megapixel and possibly RAW support for a phone. Is this even necessary? Is this
You know what's funny, right? Okay, in a funny way, RAW would be handy for this because you've crammed a 12 megapixel camera into a phone, so the quality of the camera is probably not going to be that great. And by shooting in RAW, using a piece of expensive equipment, you might be able to recover some of the crap that the camera takes.
Okay.
So I would say shooting in RAW on this would probably be a good thing because the chances are you're going to need all the fine adjustments you can possibly get your hands on.
Doesn't this go to the same thing, though? I mean, you're talking about a sensor here that we have no idea what it is, but given the fact that it's a cell phone, you can't say that it's got a great sensor on it, 12 megapixels or not. Shooting in RAW, isn't this the same theory, Ewan, is saying of taking a, you know, like we said, with the music? If you're going to sit there and spend $9,000 on an app, but pump it down to an MP3 or even play an 80 kilobits MP3 on it, isn't it pointless?
I think Alex has got exactly the right output there. I mean, I think the one thing you've got to think about is, you know, we've got this idea now that came out the other week with Chris Forsman's article about 12 megapixels is enough. If we're going to say, right, 12 megapixels is enough, stop putting your development money, manufacturers, into making more than 12 megapixels and start putting that development money into making quality within those micro 12 megapixel sensors, I think then this could be really, really good and really, really excellent. But if you look at what Alex has said there, he's on the money. You know, at the moment there isn't that quality to size ratio with tiny sensors for phones, and you stick this on, it's put on as a gimmick, it's not put on as any useful functionality. But basically it's in the hands of someone who's a professional photographer. They'll say, all right, I can shoot with that and I'll probably be able to recover it and get something that's half decent. But you never shoot commercial work stuff. Absolute rubbish.
Yeah, exactly.
Not commercial work, but I'm trying. First and foremost, I'm trying to see RAW takes up a huge amount of room, right?
Yeah, but it's double.
Putting it into something that you know might make more sense to you. If you've got a band, or you've got a room where the audio is not very good, and you've got to record a band, and it's not the greatest room set up for recording. Mm. you want to record that on the best quality, like, I don't know, record it on vinyl, record it on something that's a really good quality record, because the sound that you're getting in the first place isn't that good. It gives you more room for being able to play with it, tweak it, and play with it. Okay. And so with this, because the camera itself probably isn't so fantastic, make the way you record it the best you possibly can, because then you might be able to tweak and just get a little bit more out of it. If you start off with a bad sound recording, you know, a bad amp sound room, and then you record it and save it in bad quality, you've got no way of being able to recover it. So that's why I'm saying RAW on this is probably the only saving grace that this phone will have.
Okay, I got you. I see, yeah. But then you got to go into the point, how practical is it? Yeah, I can record a band in a room on you know, on reel-to-reel, you know, 8-track, whatever, to get the best analog sound I can out of that room, no matter how crap it is. But at the end of the day, is it really worth it? Because it's crap anyways. I mean, it's what am I actually going to be able to do with it? Wouldn't it be better just to set up a digital recorder and just go that direction? And you know, this goes back to the argument, and Ewan makes this all the time. It's RAW, it's JPEG, JPEG, RAW. Being at a phone, isn't JPEG enough?
More than. And you've probably got to find as well that if you use the word RAW in front of HACC users, they'd be thinking about whether their meat's cooked or not. You know, that's their only application of it. So it's not, it's a gimmick. People will have a play with it to see if it's any good, but the application is going to be exactly as Alex says, you know, you'll recover crap a little bit.
I would be worried if I used RAW on this camera, I'd get salmonella.
it just makes me kind of go back to, you know, because we always talk about, well, JPEG's fine, RAW's fine, but to me, when I'm hearing how Alex is talking about this, it makes me think, well, if the source is crap, no matter what, maybe I should shoot in RAW. At least I can do more with it. So that makes me want to lean more towards shooting in RAW all the time.
Proving a fool and his money are easily parted. Moving on.
And that's why I'm always broke. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. Shall we move into the questions?
Yes.
Okay, let's do it. First one's from Cameron. He's from Portland. He says, hey, guys, my camera is a Nikon D90, and I've been trying to shoot in RAW since I heard Alex say that he recommended RAW a few weeks ago. What a perfect segue. The only problem I have noticed is that my camera can't manage to keep up if I'm shooting continuously, and also when I come to transfer the files, they take ages to transfer. Am I doing something wrong? Is there anything I can do to speed this up? Thanks. Love the show. I guess this is directed towards Mr. Alex RAW Fox right now.
Yeah, no, I'd say the problem sounds like, because the Nikon D90, the processor speed on that's fine. And the answer to your question comes from when you're saying it's taken ages to transfer the files. I think you're using a too slow, I think there are SD cards in there. I think you need to use a faster SD card. And anyone that's not on video, you're probably quite a lot better off than the rest of us that just witness Ewan and his lens. So I would say the problem with this seems to be you need to use a faster SD card, and that's what's slowing down the system. The camera is built to be able to take the continuous shooting in full RAW format and being able to do it. I think it's quite a lot. It's like 50 frames before it starts to slow down. So just put a faster SD card in. I'm pretty sure that's your problem if you're suffering from slow transfer rates when you try and upload it to the computer. Ewan, if you finish making love to your lens, have you got anything to add?
No, I think it's card. Absolutely. Spend the extra money and get a card. The only caution to that is make sure that I don't know what the write speed is on the D90, but make sure that the write speed is equivalent to the card that you buy. Don't spend an extra 60 quid or something and get one, you know, a lightning fast card if your D90 won't write to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm imagining it'll do a 133 or a 200 times speed or something. Okay,
but just check that. It's not worth, you know, for 60 quid, I'd check the specs.
I'm surprised you just didn't tell him to shoot in JPEG.
It depends what he's doing with it. You know, I'm not going to say, you know, this is, we're not going to do this. No, move on. You know my feeling on it.
Yeah, I know. Go back to licking your links. Let's see. I gents, this is from Todd from Detroit. I've been trying, or toying, should I say, with the idea of getting a new monitor for touching my images, and wondered if you had any specific recommendations of monitors or tips when evaluating that is a monitor. By the way, what monitors are you using for your photography work? It's actually a good question. Ewan, do you want to start off?
I use a 30-inch Hasbro monitor, which is beautiful. It's the same panel that's in the Apple 30-inch monitors, but it's half the price. And it's gorgeous. It's super stunning gorgeous. It's old. It's probably about 7 years old now, and I'm starting to lose the odd pixel here and there, but then they come back. So, you know, I'm waiting for it to collapse. If it switches itself off for a while, sometimes when it comes on, it's just green and it takes a little while to warm up. I've also got a Hyundai 24-inch monitor to the right, which is my second screen, and that's beautiful. Both of them calibrate superbly. I think if you're buying monitors these days, I think the quality of panels is significantly higher, and there isn't probably an awful lot to cut between the two or three of them that you look at. Go big. Go highest resolution you can afford, and make sure you look at the contrast ratios. Buy something at 3,000 to 1 contrast ratio, because then your blacks are pretty black and your whites are pretty white.
Mm. Alex?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd add, I mean, I, and so do you, and we use Macs. I reckon the main reason I went from PC to Mac was because I just could not take the screens being the wrong colour anymore. Didn't matter how many times I calibrated a PC screen, within minutes the whole thing was wrong again. And so, I don't want to be too disingenuous, but if you're using a PC, then don't spend too much money, because it's a bit of a waste of time. If you're using a Mac, then first of all, I would recommend Mac screens. But if you haven't got a house to remortgage to buy one, then there's quite a few on the market. There's quite a few pro screens, but I quite like the definitely the price. But some of the Samsung screens, they are very good quality and very, very good value for money. Again, unless you really are going for the top end photography, don't spend more than £200 or £300 on a 22 to 24-inch screen. There's no point. You can spend thousands on a single screen, but again, if you're using PC, you know, I mean, don't go and buy a £90 screen, but don't spend more than £200 on it.
I have a question for you guys. How do you feel about LG screens?
Fine.
Ewan?
I mean, I've never really used one, but I mean, the ones that I've seen running in shops, they look fine. And you know, all of the screens that are out there now calibrate superbly with a lot of the spider tools and that kind of stuff, or the Hueys. I think the thing to look for is contrast ratio, because you want your blacks black and your whites white, and that's the key part. And the thing that you've got beautifully with Apple screens is all Apple screens have got fantastic contrast ratios.
Oh, they're beautiful. The only thing I'd say, especially about LG, even if you're not buying a screen that's labelled LG, there's a very good chance that the actual inside of that screen was made by LG.
Yeah. Yeah, my panel's Panasonic.
That's what I was going to say. There's a lot of panels that are just, you know, they're just generic panels, and they're just literally stuffing these things and putting a label on it nowadays. So that's what I was kind of wondering.
LG is a very good pick, actually.
Okay. Good. I actually have an LG in front of me, which I absolutely love, just to be honest. So, last question, guys. This is from Trevor. He says, I have a Canon 4D, or 450D, that is, and I'm getting to the point that I think I'm in need of an upgrade. I love the camera, but I've been having spent a lot of time in the last 3 years since I bought it, improving as a photographer. I want to move up a level and get something bigger and better. I have a few lenses, but nothing really expensive, and wondered which model Ewan and Alex thought I should move to. Or does Alex think I should drop Canon and move to Nikon? Is that what you think, Alex?
You know what? No. I think, personally, the cameras, as we've talked about, depending what you really want to specialize in, they're much of a muchness, Canon and Nikon. I mean, the 450D is a great camera. Unless you really need to, I don't know why you'd want to upgrade. I think it's a really good camera for everyday and more use. And also, you might not have very expensive lenses, but most of the time you don't need a very expensive lens. For most things you're going to shoot, I dare say the lenses you've got are going to be fine on whatever camera you move to. So for that reason, even if you've got only got £1,000 worth of lenses, stay with Canon. And if you want to buy a new lens, buy one good prime lens, you know, such as the one that Ewan is in love with at the moment, and keep what you've got, because of the lenses you've got are probably good enough for 95% of the things you're ever going to want to shoot. Mm. That's my answer.
Ewan, lens man, anything to add?
Well, here we go. That is a Canon 450D. That's what I own. That's my second body. So if mine craps out of battery power or something was a technical fault with it, I just pull this one out and I shoot with that and I sell it commercially using this. More than enough.
There you go.
If you're going to be a better photographer, you'll be a better photographer through growing in your creativity and growing in your technical knowledge. And that is 10 times what you need in order to do those two things. The creativity element, if you've got a grand burning a hole in your pocket, don't buy a body with it. Keep the body that you've got. Buy yourself a battery pack so that you can have two cameras on there, so you have two batteries in there so you can go out and shoot for longer. That's going to cost you about £100. And then take the other £900 and go and buy yourself some lenses so that you can get creative. Something with low f-stop settings, so 1.8, 2.5, so you can play around with depth of field. Get yourself something that goes to really good wide angle, 12 to 24 mil Sigma lens or something like that. It's going to burn out another £300 to £400 out of your pocket. You can buy a second-hand one on eBay for £200. You can take the other £800, take the wife away for a weekend and use it.
Very good. Just to add one other small thing. As for upgrading cameras, I would have said in the last 2 or 3 years, most cameras that have come on the market are of a level where you are going to get a good picture out of it. 7, 8 years ago, up to about 3 or 4 years ago, every upgrade of the camera was sufficiently advanced to actually make your picture a better picture. It was picking up better colours. You weren't getting so much bleed in it. You weren't getting grain in it. There was a lot of improvement over that time. But I would have said maybe the last 2 years, a lot of camera upgrades, they make things a bit faster, they make things a tiny bit sharper, and they make, obviously, the numbers are bigger because that's what they're selling them on. But on the most part, if you go and buy yourself, say, the next Canon up, you're not going to notice such a significant difference. The upgrades to cameras now, cameras are at a stage now where they are good enough for most of what you'll ever want to do. The upgrades aren't as significant as they used to be. I owned a D70 or a D70S. And then when I bought the D80, my life was so much easier. There was a lot of pictures I was taking that the D70S was making a real pig's mess of. And the D80 just, it was, wow, that's one less thing to worry about. But not long after that, I would say, especially with Nikon, there hasn't been a vast improvement between any camera and any new camera. They got to a stage where they were good enough. Now they're just brilliant. Whereas 5, 10 years ago, you needed to upgrade because the one you had wouldn't take the picture you wanted. So wouldn't get so worried about upgrading cameras. This is a three-year-old decent camera. Unless you want to spend an awful lot of money and go for stupidly big megapixels, I can't see any need to upgrade it.
And sometimes it's not always about the tools either. It's about striving to be Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, no, burn it afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if you burn it, you probably will need a new camera.
Your photo questions always answered here on Bagel Tech Photo. Send them in, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. We'd love to give them. We'd love to answer them. And as you can always see, we're never going to tell you to go out and buy stuff that you don't need. What you got it works enough. We're going to let you know that. We're not out to push you into spending more money if you don't need to. bageltechphoto@gmail.com. Keep them coming every week. We'd love to get them. Are we going to do the cheap thingy at the end, guys? Or do you want to get into it now?
Let's do it.
Let's go ahead and do it now. Okay, you can go ahead and start us off with your cheap thing.
Mine was just a tip, really, for if you've got a trouble balancing a foreground object with a light background. So it constantly, the background blows out the front image, or when you actually look at the focusing on the objects at the front, you end up with a just a a blown out background through sky. One of the things that you can do is move your camera a little bit further away, take all of your settings and go to aperture priority, close the aperture down as far as you can, and take your ISO range down as far as you can. Focus on the object that's very, very dark, and then switch it onto manual focus, then move across and meter off the sky so that you're getting the sky perfect. Then dig out your flash gun, make sure your exposure is at least half a second, and then shoot and try and manually send the flash off to illuminate the object in the front. Real hit and miss, but you can get some fantastic results with it, and it's digital, so what's the point in worrying about it? Have a play.
Good tip. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, it's a sort of tip, sort of thing I've been using when I photograph statues. I can light things a certain way, and quite often I use 4 to 6 second exposures quite often. So I have the thing lit the way I want, and I've normally got a little pocket torch with me, and there might be just somewhere that I'll play around, and I might just fire the light on the front of the statue somewhere. It just gives you a slight different lighting effect that you wouldn't be able to get any other way.
Yeah, I've done work indoors where I've had to highlight machines, and bits of the machines are in darkness because of the way the lighting is, and I've just put the thing on a very long exposure and remote triggered it on a timer, and then I've got a little thing that I can be 100 metres away as well and set off me camera, so I'll just stand somewhere with a flash. And even if you're in the image, if it's a long exposure like 6 to 10 seconds, if you're keeping moving, you probably won't even show up in it if you're fairly quick, but the light will.
I kind of just answered my own question. I was asking you, can you just do this on pro cameras? I was going to say, can I try this on the iPhone?
You can do it on anything where you can set aperture priority and you can control your ISO.
There is also one thing. You've got to remember this trick. You can do in reverse. If you've got something that you're having trouble because it's overlit, say the front of the statue, if you like, is overlit, you can do exactly the same way as you used to do when you're processing photographs. Have a play, long exposure, at some point in exposure, put something in front of the lens and pull it away. Because if you do that, then you're actually doing the opposite. You're underlighting certain sections. And there's lots and lots of fun tricks you can play with photography. Now, we learn a lot of these tricks because we did them in the darkroom when we were processing photographs. We learnt ways of burning and dodging and various other things. You can still do them, but nowadays, if you don't do them on Photoshop, you have to do them when you take them. But there's some really interesting, fun things you can do.
I think there's a good point in that dodging and burning has become so easy with Photoshop that if you wanted to dodge and burn in a dark room, it was a pain in the arse and it was really hit and miss. Whereas if you knew you could screw around with the camera, then there's a chance you could shoot 3 images and one of them would be fine, and you wouldn't need to dodge and burn in the dark room. You save yourself an immense amount of time, and people, because they can have the crutch of Photoshop, just think, oh, I'll fix it later in Photoshop, and they miss out on the creative element of it. Like I said, you know, colored gels and things like that in front of your flash gun, and you can totally change the cast of certain parts of your image. Green sweep papers.
Yeah, really cool. Alex, your tip, or should I say your cool or cheap thingy, should I say, I really like. Go ahead and tell everybody.
It's something I'd like to sort of at some point, you know, have a section on the program anyway. But I think we take for granted that everybody's going to have some access to some cool piece of photo software, even if it's Photoshop Elements or something. But there are quite a lot of free alternatives. And the one that stands out to me is called GIMP. It's made by Google. And I'd only ever flicked through it recently because, as you know, someone mentioned it to me and I was thinking, well, I don't know. It's not going to be very good because it's free, is it? Isn't it? But I actually took the trouble because somebody asked me a question about it. And, okay, it's not as good as Photoshop, but I'd say it's probably better than Photoshop Elements. It's an incredibly amazing piece of free software, and there's a quick list I was looking down here. You can do paths on it, you can do masking, you can do red eye removal, you can do shapes, you can do field grains, you can do noise reduction. There's just so much on this piece of software that I didn't think you'd get with a free piece of software. And I will download it and have a really good play with it, because I think that, I mean, obviously I already own Photoshop, so I'm not going to throw it away. But I think there's a lot of things out there people aren't doing because of they think that you need to spend £500-600 on a piece of software to be able to do it. And news to me is that's not the case.
GIMP's so, also got a lot better now because it's in a single window UI as well, whereas before it was all over the place.
Yes, yeah, and I did notice that too. The way it's put together seems to be very clever. And by no means, GIMP is not the only piece of software out there that offers a lot of this. So I will come back and I will put together a few things maybe for the show at some point. But I would recommend anyone that wants to be a little bit more hands-on with their photography, especially on the computer side, go and download GIMP and have a good look. There's tutorials everywhere. And you'll be amazed what you can do on a free piece of software.
It is a great piece of software, Alex. I mean, and what's great about it, it's available for every platform. You can get it on Linux, you can get it on Mac, and you can get it on for Windows XP, XP Service Pack 2 and higher. It really is great. Great pick. Yeah, I love GIMP. Of course, I love cheap crap. So,
but I would like to, at some point, have a more in-depth look at all these pieces of software. But there's a lot out there that, you know, maybe people need to have their attention brought to.
Indeed. And we will do it on the show. Speaking of the show, you still want to get this show every week. You need your photo fix. You've got to support our sponsor, UK2.net. Go on over to BagelTechNews.com right now. You're going to see their little emblem down there at the bottom. Click on that. That's all you need to do. We're not asking you to go over and buy anything, but when you do that, go over there, check it out. I mean, VPS servers, we got a code for BagelTech that right now they actually will get you... Ewan, you always know this better than me, but...
Well, it's changed.
It's changed now.
Yeah, I got an email yesterday from Craig at UK2. As of this morning, if any BagelTech listener goes and uses the click-through from our website, when they get to check out, if they type in the offer code BagelTech, they'll get 15% off any service that UK2 offer.
Sweet.
Huge.
Well, seeing as I've spent over £1,000 with them in the last year, that would have saved me £150. So please get over there and make the most of it. And, you know, even if they weren't the sponsor of this program, I've used them because I found them competitive. And every time I broke something, they were straight back and they fixed it for me. I cannot fault them as a company.
No, absolutely.
There you go. Yeah. UK2.net.
Use the click through even if you want to log into your account. Just use the click through. Stop what you're doing now. Click through.
There you go. That's all you got to do. And that keeps us on the air and it allows you to keep us to bring you the photo show, the Mac show, all the shows on the BagelTech Network free to you each and every week. Please, BagelTechNews.com, click the click through. Thank you so much for all your support over there. Fine folks over there at UK2.net. Guys, we're at that point. Time of the show.
Can we just do a quick feature? Sorry to hijack, but the London Mac User Group is doing live coverage of the keynotes from WWDC on Monday night at the Wood Marylebone Pub, which is just off Baker Street in the middle of London. And if you go there, you go downstairs, they've got a bar on, and they'll be broadcasting the thing via a projector, so you can watch it as live with blow by blow as it happens. So that's the Wood Marylebone Pub just off Baker Street in London.
Let's hope there's not too many blow by blows. It's only a keynote.
Exactly.
Going to turn into some like football hooligans or something, huh?
You're going to get Bill Gates turn up and punch Steve Jobs on the nose.
All right. Anything else? You got anything you want to promote there, Alex?
No. Only myself and my incredible lifestyle.
Reviews.
And you can... reviews. Yeah, I was going to say reviews. Keep them coming there. iTunes. It really helps us with the rankings. It lets other people know about the show, and it lets us know what you think of the show. And post it. Give us your honest opinion. That way, we can also build off of that. And we do really need the reviews. Stick them up in iTunes. Pretty please.
Yeah, and get over to Flickr and join the BagelTech Flickr group, BagelTech Photo Flickr group. And we've extended the deadline for last month's task, just to give a few people that were a bit too busy to get in. So please get in your picture. It's your interpretation of a famous album cover, and no prizes. But I tell you what, if you win, you'll be allowed to click on the the UK2.net on BagelTech, and you can have 15% off.
Yeah.
And if you lose, you can have it as well.
It's a win-win situation.
There you go.
Can I ask you now, Ewan?
What?
Where can we get a hold of you?
Oh, you can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter or at Bagel Tech News on Twitter. And you can do commercial photography work through ewanrankin.co.uk.
Not forgetting the doghouse if he gets caught about buying those lenses.
Shh. Yeah. We'll be seeing those lenses on eBay before you know it.
Move it on.
Alex, where can we get a hold of you?
Alex G. Fox at Twittery Thing.
Twittery Thing, as always. And you're getting a lot more followers, I see.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or are they stalkers? I can't remember.
Either way, it's a Twitter follower, and it's great to have.
I found a great new way of getting followers. You just put in words like migraine or back problem or anything, and you get all these bots that find you, and you get all these people that own migraine clinics and backgrain clinics, and they all start following you. It's a really good way of getting your numbers up.
Viagra. It's amazing.
I wouldn't know.
Until next week, we do hope you come back pretty please, as we will be here next week for another episode of Bagel Tech Photo. Thank you so much for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.